Hey yo, and here we go. Another episode of We Talk Music is on the air and in your ear. And once again, I'm Martin, joined by, well, his name is Mr. Brett Podcast. That's your official name, isn't it?
That's true.
That's what it says in the driver's license,
birth certificate, all that stuff. You know, it's like Mr. Brett Podcast. But you know what? It doesn't matter. People aren't looking for my driver's license. I mean, hopefully. What they are looking for is they're looking for our next interview. And we are welcoming back wonderful gentleman, entrepreneur. He's a singer, songwriter, multi-instrumentalist, Zach Baer. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks, guys. I appreciate it. How are you doing?
We're doing good. Getting a chance to talk to you again always makes us happy. And this time, I know we touched on it a little bit last time, but now Fight is officially out and the lyric video's out. So, you know, good times are here for you.
Yeah, it's been out for a little while now, and it seems to be doing pretty good. So I'm real happy about it. You know, I love the song and hope it ends up, you know, touching a few people in a positive manner.
Well, it's been just a little over 7 months since we talked to you last. What have you been doing?
I mean,
yeah.
Well, 7 months. Wow, has it been that long? That's crazy.
I know.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So obviously, I did put the Fight single out. That was, I don't know, maybe 3 months ago, 2-3 months ago. Which is going pretty well. And beyond that, it's really kind of just barely starting to get into rehearsal again so that we can get out and play some shows. And, you know, on the entrepreneurial side, just, you know, still at the grindstone working on our technology. And and we opened a new restaurant and live music venue in Clearwater, Florida, called Rock House Live Clearwater Beach. So I've been busy.
No, you know, it sounds, seems.
Yeah. Oh, sorry.
Well, I'm just going to say
you
seems.
You opened that.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Brett. No, all right. No, go ahead. I defer to you. You are Mr. Brett Podcast.
Yeah, that's right, Mister. They call me Mister, but you
King
know
the casters.
It's interesting that you are like. It seems such an odd time to open up a new restaurant.
Yeah, you know, it was odd. I mean, we started working on this project and. November of last year, and it took several months in order to get, you know, the permits and get the building finished and things like that. So, you know, we didn't end up opening until March, but, you know, quite frankly, one of the reasons we decided to move forward with opening this flagship location was that a lot of the businesses that in the restaurant area had closed, and there were just really some good opportunities to, you know, to go in and really flesh out the concept and launch it so that by the time the economy started coming back again, we'd already be rocking and rolling. And that's really kind of how it worked out. You know, I've had the concept for about 15 years now. I opened one in Dallas for a couple of years back in 2006. And then I opened two more locations in Tennessee where I live that are both still open that are kind of what I would call incubator locations. And then I ended up teaming up with Jock Weaver, who was the former president of Hard Rock Cafe International, to launch, you know, really launch the brand globally. And that's what we're working on doing with Clearwater being the first location.
What is the concept? How would you describe it to us?
I would describe it as a hybrid live music venue and entertainment themed restaurant that offers people the opportunity to have obviously great food and great drinks in a really fun environment. And we focus the concept on what we call the fun factor. So every time you come in there, you know, you want to have, you know, a fun time, you know, so whether it's karaoke that we have running at night or, you know, live music featuring local, regional or national talent, or music videos that we have playing on the screens. You know, we want people to have a good time, and that's really what it's all about. And we factored in some of the, my other company that I'm CEO of Venue, some of Venue's technologies in that we are leveraging the SetFM Instant Live platform so that we can actually record bands and release the content, you know, to the fans immediately after the show. And we're also leveraging the ability to track that music with our Soundster product so that we can hopefully make sure that you know, artists get some money back in their pocket from accurate tracking of the musical data. So it's a great concept. You know, it's started off with a bang. Literally the first day we opened up, we thought we were going to do a soft open, and we were slammed to the gills, and it's been pretty much slammed every day. So we're pretty excited about it.
Well, there's no question. I mean, of course, everybody's itching for live music and to get out and stuff like that. So it is probably nice to be able to jump out and get a venue like that. Do you think that because of all your other technologies and all the other things that you can offer, that having this restaurant and especially then like, you know, trying to bring it worldwide becomes just a better concept because you have so much more to value add to it?
I mean, that's part of what we think that, you know, it's a big differentiator. You know, not only are we going to offer the Instant Live, you know, products and, you know, the advanced technology for tracking the music, we're also going to be able to use a proprietary streaming system that will allow us to basically have, let's say you have a band playing in Clearwater. We'll broadcast them live through our streaming services to other Rock House locations. So you can be in Sydney, Australia, watching a band that's playing live at Rock House in Clearwater, you know, stuff like that. So it's really an interesting concept, and the value add there is not only are you having, you know, great food and drink and a good time, but you also have, you know, the content and the merchandise and stuff like that.
What is the decor like in the restaurant?
Very rock and roll, you know. It's you know, kind of you know, black and silver in a lot of places. We've got some aluminum, I guess it's aluminum, kind of diamond plate around the bar area. It's look cool. It's a modern concept. We're still in the process of, you know, putting rock and roll art in. But it's definitely way different than you would picture like a Hard Rock or something like that, because we're not into memorabilia or anything like that. But it's really more of a straightforward, you know, good atmosphere. It makes you kind of feel like you're backstage, if that makes sense. You know, we've got truss lighting, like stage lighting and LEDs up in the entire building, you know, so that literally like we can tap into the band's lights, you know, DMX control band lights, and the entire place can be, like, you know, you'll feel like you're on stage.
Now, you talk about the streaming thing, and is that the kind of idea that just came to you during the pandemic, or was that something that you were working on before?
Actually, I've had that idea for almost probably 15 years, and the technology has gotten to the point where it's advanced enough to really be able to handle it. So this just kind of really gave us the opportunity to press that part of it forward.
Are there ideas then that like kind of have come up during the pandemic where you suddenly see like, oh, I see an opening because like now the pandemic has illustrated it?
Well, I mean, I think really the streaming factor is probably the most important, you know, it's not a new idea, but it was definitely reimagined, you know, in the event, for example, if the local governments were to, you know, shut us down again or whatever, we would still have the ability to bring bands in and stream them live and, you know, provide an income stream, you know, to both us and to, you know, to the artists. So I think that's probably the biggest new slash old idea that came to light, you know. And, you know, obviously the other thing that we focus on is we're in a tourism area, and that started to bounce back. And during the time of, you know, the real lockdown COVID, you know, we were using a lot of tablet services like Uber Eats and DoorDash and stuff like that to help kind of balance out the lack of sit down customers that we had to adhere to because of the restrictions.
Is that all of your good old ideas, or you got a few more in there?
You know, I mean, I think really that's probably amount to. Amounts to about all of them. I mean, one of the cool things about Rock House, though, is that, you know, both my partner, Jock, and I, we work in the music business. He's worked in the music business for probably 30 plus years, and I've worked in the music business for about 20 years now. So we have good relationships with, you know, artists and labels and promoters and management companies and things like that.
Well, we'll even
really
fight
working.
Oops.
Go ahead.
Sorry. Yeah, no, I was just going to say even Fight is, something that's a long-term idea. Can you tell us a little bit of the history of the composition?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so I literally wrote that in the aftermath of 9/11 and recorded it in a demo format, probably in, 2002, I guess. And it sat on a shelf, and I didn't really ever do anything with it. And then this pandemic hit, and it struck me that the lyrics and the meaning were very much the same for this tragedy as it was for 9/11. So I had already started to go in the studio. I was recording Ordinary Girl, and had laid down a couple other tracks, and decided to move forward with Skid Mills producing to get Fight done. And I'm really glad I did, because I think it really does hold a lot of meaning for what's going on right now. And we're all in this together. We're not out of the woods yet. We're getting there, but there's some parts of the world that are still suffering badly, So Fight does have a lot of meaning, both now and, back after 9/11.
Yeah, you're right. There are parts of the world. It's easy to forget that Mexico, Brazil, Italy, places like this are, having quite a rough go with it still. Where were you?
India's terrible right now.
Yeah, India is another terrible one. Yeah, that's right. Where were you during 9/11?
I actually was in Dallas, and I had literally just woke up in the morning. My alarm clock, I had like a little clock radio. And I woke up to the sound of the DJ saying, well, it looks like a small plane crashed into the World Trade Center. I was like, man, that's weird. And I had one of those big stand on the floor type big screen TVs back then. Turned it on, and, the first thing you see is the tower smoking. And I was thinking, like, there is no way that was not a small plane that hit that. And within 2 minutes after I started watching, I saw the second plane hit the tower, and just like that, I was, like everybody else, just absolutely stunned. And I called my cousin who was in the National Guard and Army National Guard. And I told him, I said, you better get your stuff ready, because there's getting ready to be a war. And sure enough, he was shipped out, probably a month later. But yeah, I remember, down to the minute, and, we were glued to the TV for pretty much 3 days straight, with all that going on. And I remember distinctly, Dallas has a lot of air traffic, and I remember they grounded all the planes, and it was really weird, because you normally you hear the planes flying overhead, and there was absolutely nothing. It was crazy.
Yeah, it's really interesting how, of course, these moments always, are so memorable for us, now, 20 plus years on, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah, no doubt. And then, I think it was probably maybe 6 months after that I actually visited Ground Zero. I mean, it was still smoldering at that point. And, I had a lot of friends in New York and, a couple that were associated with the tower collapse. And it was really, really hard, and those of us who've been around since that time, we will never forget. I mean, that's our Pearl Harbor,
Mm-hmm. So, as you're doing this music, like especially now, like, are you creating the more songs so that you can do another EP soon?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So I've been doing some writing, and, I'm hoping that, we've got a couple more songs that we're going to release as singles off the EP, but I'm hoping to get back in the studio in the summer timeframe and get some more work done. Our company was supposed to go out with Matchbox 20 on their tour and record them this summer, but that's now been put off till May of 2022. So it looks like I'll have some more time on my hands to do stuff like that.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, talk about everything getting pushed off, but I think especially the bigger ones, the bigger tours. We're seeing a lot of like little small venues kind of reopening and giving the chance to get people going again.
Yeah. And that's, very, very thankful that that's happening. And, you're exactly right, is that, the larger shows, the outdoor sheds and things like that, and the arenas obviously are going to be put off quite a bit longer. And I think a big issue with that is not just the safety of the people that are coming to the shows, but also the fact that a lot of insurance companies probably will not insure a big event like that until they know everybody's going to be safe. And, you know, you've probably watched the news in this country. Half this country are idiots and they won't get their shots. It's going to take that much. Well, I mean, it's true. I mean, just get your shot, shut up, wear your mask, and, you know, and just do the right thing, you know, protect your fellow human. So it's going to make it take that much longer, I think, for this country to really fully get back into gear.
Yeah, it's a, you know, as an outsider, we watch it and we just wonder sometimes, just shake our heads. I mean, I saw the UFC had 15,000 people and probably about 12,000 of them weren't masked on the weekend in an indoor stadium. And I thought, just a little longer, guys, you get through this. Like, just why can't you wait that little bit longer?
Oh, yeah, exactly. You know, it's not that big a deal if you just do what, you know, do the right thing. We know that masks help, you know, get your shot. You've been having vaccines since you were a little kid. You're not dead. You know, it's a minuscule chance you're going to have any issues. And I got both my shots. I had the Pfizer shot and didn't have a single reaction at all, you know, and I just feel wonderful that, you know, at least now I'm vaccinated, but now we got to get these other people vaccinated so this thing doesn't have time to mutate into something else that the vaccine won't cover.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point. As far as yourself, back to your music, I find your singing voice to have a very similar tone to that of Stephen Page from the former lead singer of the Bare Naked Ladies. What kind of vocal techniques do you use for warming up and you know, training and that type of thing have you had?
Oh, that's easy, man. Shoddy Egger. No, I'm just kidding.
Nothing but the best.
I try to warm up. You know, I mean, my vocal technique is that I do about probably 10 minutes of warm up before a show. You know, obviously back in the day, I did like the Jaeger, you know, but I found that, you know, when you start to hit the high notes, it really kind of doesn't work out too well. So, you know, 10, 15 minute warm up and then I'm ready to rock and roll. You know, it's very, very simple. I never really had formal voice lessons. But I have known a lot of people that have given me tips along the way. So I've always been fortunate enough that I can do everything from the lower register stuff to some of the higher stuff like Journey, you know, if I was going to cover something like, you know, high register stuff. So, you know, the trick for me is, you know, not to drink before I go out and play a gig and then I'll have a couple of drinks afterwards.
no 3-packs a day smoking habit to get that growl in your voice.
no smoking here. No, can't do it. Yep, none of that.
Is there a point?
Like, I have to really make an effort. Go ahead.
No.
I was going to say I have to try hard to get the growl. You know, it's not something that comes natural.
Mm-hmm.
I'm more the Geddy Lee, you know, really melodic kind of guy than I am the you know, Metallica or something like that.
Yeah. Now, as you were kind of growing in the music industry and you did meet these people and you talk about learning from them, like, was this the kind of case where they gave you tips because they knew you were a musician, or were you kind of asking around a little bit because you knew that it was something else that you kind of wanted to add?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I would ask a little bit. I mean, you know, along the way, I've been fortunate enough to do some cool stuff. Like, I was in journalism when I was in high school and college and, you know, got to interview some cool bands. And, you know, at that age, you know, like, you know, you talk to, you know, like a guy like Brad Delp, who I got to interview from Boston. And, you know, you kind of let it slip out that, you know, you're a musician and, you know, what kind of stuff can you recommend? And little things like that along the way. And then as I've gotten older, I've really learned a lot more from being at shows a lot and observing and really being analytical of the performers. You know, for example, you know, I learned a lot from Rob Thomas after working with him for, you know, I guess 3 years now on his tours and some of the charity stuff that he does. And I think that watching him sing, watching him and listening to him tell stories has allowed me to become a better frontman, because I see how that works, and I see that how the audience relates to that, you know, and you know, things like that really lend itself to a better overall performance. And, you know, when it comes to vocals, you know, guys, I've worked with, Paul Rogers, you know, from Bad Company. I've worked with Bad Company, you know, and this is a guy that warms up and drinks water and, you know, barely talks to anybody, you know, before his show. And you learn a lot from that, you know, because it comes out in his vocals, you know, and kind of the same thing with Kelly Hansen, who's now with, you know, has been with Foreigner now for quite a long time. And Kelly's another guy that, you know, he might say one or two words for you, you know, to you before a show, because he's saving his vocal cords for every ounce that he puts into it. And he does put a lot into it. So you learn a lot from that kind of stuff. Just, you know, paying attention.
Mm-hmm. Is that about respecting the audience, do you think? Is that about, you know, personal pride or respecting the audience? Or what do you think is kind of drives that kind of dedication?
Well, I think it's both. You know, I mean, for me, I don't want to go out and give a, you know, crap performance. You know, I want to give the audience everything I can, you know, and that's the most important thing. If people are paying to come see the band, then they deserve to get not just a good show, but a great show in every respect. And, you know, I think most artists, especially vocalists, feel like that if they're not at their peak performance, then they're not giving, you know, the audience all they can. And then, of course, there is a certain amount of personal pride, as you want to go out there and kick some ass. And being able to do that and walk off at the end of the show and feel like you're floating on cloud nine, I mean, that's the best feeling in the world.
What would you say your favorite show was that you've done?
That I've done?
Yeah.
You know, we did a show about a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, relatively recent. We were actually playing, we were out with Jack Russell's Great White. And whatever the reason, the energy on the stage was insane. The audience was, you know, on fire. And it was just an all around awesome show. It was great. You know, big, nice, big audience, nice, big stage, you know, working with a great band. It was just a good experience.
So then on the other side of that, like, I'm sure that you have some like, oh man, that was a rough show. What was a story from a rough show?
Oh, I got a couple of good ones for that. So, I mean, I've been playing for a long time. So, you know, I played in the only cover band I've ever played in, really, my own band called No Control, which I started back in 91 in Houston. And I don't know, it was probably around 93 or whatever. And one of my guitar players, I mean, he was so good, very, very talented. But like many guitar players, he had alcohol issues, substance issues. And we had a gig at, and I can't remember the name of the place we were playing, but the Houston Press, you know, which is kind of like the weekly, you know, arts magazine. They were actually going to come out and do a review, you know, and check the band out and write us up and whatnot. You know, so it was kind of a big deal for us. We were starting to get on the radar. We'll get to the gig and everybody's set up, but Rick has not walked in yet. And we're all standing around there waiting for him and waiting, waiting. Finally, he walks in, and the reporter is already there, by the way. And he walks in and he's so drunk he can hardly walk. He's carrying his amp in one hand and he goes up to the stage and he goes to put his amp down on the floor and he just rolled over like a little roly-poly on the ground. He was so wasted. And I had to tell him to go home, and we had to play, you know, instead of a normal 4-piece band, we had to play 3-piece. So the performance wasn't as good, but yeah, that was a pretty terrible moment. You know, I won't forget that. It's funny now when you look back at it, but you know, I've got dozens of stories like that. I mean, a lot of it's funny. I mean, one time I was running around a place. I was playing bass at the time, and I was wireless, and I had a little headset mic so I could run around and sing. And I was running around a club and jumped up on a bar stool trying to be Billy Badass and hit my head on a crossbeam, almost knocked myself out. I'm seeing stars, and I'm trying to continue to play and sing and stagger back to the stage. Yeah, that was fun. Yeah, there's been some there's been some good times.
I'm always impressed when I see the musicians that are willing to kind of go out into the audience and that's part of their actual set, because it feels like, you know, not necessarily taking your life into your hands, but you're taking your safety into your hands for sure.
Oh, I love it. Yeah, I've always loved it. I remember playing another place. It was in Galveston. They had a big stage. I mean, you know, high. It was like 3 or 4 foot high stage, probably 3 feet, I guess, because the tables in the audience were roughly the same height as the stage. And we were playing a song, and you know, I got into that Billy Badass mode again. And there was a table of like 6 people, you know, rectangular table sitting, you know, a few feet from the stage. I was like, I'm going to go jump on that table, you know. And again, I was playing bass and had my little microphone and everything. And so I took a run and jump and didn't realize before I did it, it was not a 4-legged table. It had a center stand on the table. So when I landed on that table, the table basically flipped down and I slid on my back as beers and everything went flying and people jumped up from their chairs, and I'm there laying on my back playing the bass, and I'm thinking I'm getting ready to get my ass beat. And in actuality, all the people, they're like, yeah, yeah. You know, they were like really digging it and stuff. So, you know, it came out good. So it was fun.
Now you talk about like big stages and stuff like that. Like what's a good size stage? And then did you kind of use your experience when you were creating the stage? The stages in your bars?
Yeah, so absolutely. So playing in cover bands and even original bands for so long, a lot of times you play in a space the size of, you know, like a bathroom. I mean, they're tiny, you know, awful stages, and, you know, you can't move around, and sometimes they have rails around them and, you know, just kind of crazy stuff like that. So definitely took that experience forward when we built the first rock house in 2006 and then built the second one in 2013. I built big stages, you know, 24 feet, at least 24 feet wide and at least 12 to 15 feet deep. So it's big enough to accommodate, you know, national acts and, you know, multiple bands where the national act can set up in the back and the other bands can set up in front so they don't have to strike the gear and things like that. So, you know, absolutely that played a role in creating a good environment, you know, for bands. You know, we installed plugs in the stage, you know, and, you know, places to plug microphone cords in if we need to, and, you know, all kinds of stuff that when you're a band, you really wish that you had when you're playing somebody else's stage.
Yeah, I guess it's interesting thinking about that, because when you think about space in venues, I know, of course, you talk about those, like, small bathroom-sized stages, and I guess that they're probably trying to keep more space for like paying customers kind of coming in as opposed to the band being on stage. But I guess if you can attract a better band, then you're more likely to attract more customers.
Yeah, that, and you know, I being a musician myself, I just want to make it good for the musicians. I want them to feel good when they're doing their thing. I want them to be able to do a real performance. And I think, you know, a lot of the club size venues, it's just not really well thought out. It's like, oh, we'll stick the band over here in this corner, you know, and that's the end of it, you know. But if you really want to have an experience, you know, a good stage and good lights, you know, good production is important.
How about the acoustics of the environment? How much kind of do you take that into account?
Absolutely. So, you know, luckily the rooms that I have are all very warm rooms. They're not super deep in size, so we don't have to do a whole lot with the acoustics other than a couple of little baffles here and there. But what we found is that a lot of places don't think about this at all, and you end up having, say, a room that has a ton of glass in it and cement floors, and that's just a recipe for awful sound. No matter what you do to it, it's going to be terrible. So acoustics, obviously, it's very, very important, and you want to have acoustic material, acoustic tile, you know, on the walls that would normally reflect the sound. And if you have anything, you know, if you have a roof that allows you to put additional tiles and baffles then you probably want to do that to a certain degree, just so you don't make the sound so it's too much. Once you get people in, it generally fixes itself. But a lot of times you see these cavernous places that don't even think about, you know, any of the bounce back or any of the acoustic elements in the room. Then you just end up with kind of a muddled mess.
How long did it take you to learn this stuff?
I'm old. I'm not going to tell you how long. It took me a long time. But I mean, I've worked in this business and doing recording, you know, of major artists now for 17 years, you know, and, you know, again, kind of like the same thing with the performance aspect. I've learned a lot in terms of the production and proper miking and placement of speakers and things like that. You know, I've learned from guys like Peter Frampton, you know, when we recorded him over the course of 113 shows about 10 years ago. You know, so you work with guys like that and production teams like that, and you meet the engineers and meet the production people, and it's, you know, you just soak up that knowledge, you know, and it's, I'll take every chance I get to learn more.
And I suppose, you know, with having the Rock House, you always have venues for yourself to play in.
Yeah, but I don't like being the cheesy guy that goes and plays, you know, in his own place. I mean, I might play once in a blue moon, you know, but really kind of what we're targeting this year is we want to try to hook up with some of the bigger bands that are going to go back out on the road and leverage those relationships to play to a larger audience.
How difficult is it for you to get onto a tour, like more of a major tour, I guess, as opposed to just like one-off shows here and there?
Well, so I guess, you know, 2 years ago, a little over 2 years ago, when I really started getting more serious again about it and nobody had really heard any of the music, it was reasonably tough, but we were still able to get on with Black Oak Arkansas and got on with Jack Russell's Great White and got on a couple of shows with Scott Stapp from Creed. And really all those were due to relationships, you know, and that's kind of one of the reasons that I'm doing what I'm doing in terms of, you know, really doing it, you know, using a Grammy winning producer to produce the material and Grammy winning guy to do the mastering, and then leveraging my contacts in the music industry across the spectrum to try to jump on tours. So it's not as hard as it would be probably for some folks. It's still not easy because obviously there are tours where bands actually, you know, buy onto the tour, you know, but we're really leveraging what we've been able to do over the last 2 years. And we grew our fan base from, I think, maybe a couple thousand users on Facebook to now we have over 200,000, which is incredible. Wow. To me that many people actually like us. you know, so we're actually, you know, we're getting traction. We're making the right moves and we're putting ourselves in the right position. We're getting our songs out to radio, you know, which I think a lot of musicians, I think, take radio for granted. I do think it's, you know, still really important. That's including streaming shows and basically anything that will get your music in front of people is super important. And, you know, and Spotify, well, you know what, Spotify sucks. I mean, you know, I've probably had a million streams. Yeah. You know, a million streams over the course of, you know, three songs and have been paid maybe $500, you know, it's just ridiculous, you know, so you gotta make your money the old fashioned way. Get your music on the radio, tour, sell shit, you know, and get in front of people and really, you know, get in front of people. And you know, that's how we won a lot of our fans is we put on a great performance. We're a great, you know, a great live band, or at least I like to think so. Or I'll say this, my other three guys are awesome and I'm just kind of there. I'm there, you know, we hope to put on a good show and get fans one by one, you know, if we have to. But, yeah, to answer your question, it's still relatively tough, but with the relationships, it does make it a little bit easier, at least to get in front of them and make yourself known and have the option there if they should choose you to get on that tour.
Now, of course, the last time we spoke too, it was about Ordinary Girl, and I know that there was the big charity push for it. How did that work? How did that go?
Went well. I mean, you know, obviously we would have liked to be able to raise a lot more money, but again, you know, Spotify, you know, you raise, you know, it is what it is, you know, but it went well. You know, we've done some events and we continue to, you know, obviously, as timing wasn't really good with COVID and everything, but once things crank up again, you know, fully, you know, we obviously are going to be active in, you know, supporting the charity and going out and doing some events on behalf of the charity.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's great. I love the fact that you're so invested in charity and giving back, because I think that it's just so important these days.
I think it is too, you know, I mean, and I've always, you know, I've always been that type of person, and I've tried to help people that are, you know, are down on the luck or whatever. You know, I, you know, really never really have the resources to do it, but if I can give back in some type of a way, then it makes me feel good about it. And hopefully I can save a life here and there in terms of the, you know, suicide prevention.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the first thing is that you're making a difference, and that's the most important thing, but it's also, I think, part of the reason why you have so many, you know, people on Facebook who are fans or get the streams. I think that people want to support a person like that.
I hope so. You know, and I'm doing what comes natural. You know, I just do it. And if people like it, that makes me excited, because that means they're probably going to support, you know, the charity as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's great, you know, like, so I do want to just talk about the fight video before. Like, how did you shoot anything for that, or was it just kind of all put together?
No, it's stock footage that my very talented videographer Sabrina Hammett put together for me. And we went through a few iterations, and I let Lou Mann, who's my colleague at Venue, and he actually ran Capitol Records for about a dozen years, but I had let him look at it, and we all agreed it was fantastic, and that we didn't need to do anything else. We didn't even need to do a, you know, traditional music video. We think it was very impactful, and so we let it fly.
Yeah, for sure, and I really, like, I definitely appreciate it. There's a lot of striking imagery, and I think that that it is a great, you know, illustration of how stock footage can actually be used really well.
Absolutely, and there's great footage out there. It's just a matter of being able to put it together tastefully and have the viewer impacted emotionally through the music and through the imagery.
Mm-hmm. Well, and Fight is certainly that song, because there's no question. I have it in my head right now. So
awesome. I love it. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Oh, it is. It's a really good song. It really is. It's,
thank you.
You know, I mean, it, and all your songs are good on the EP. I mean, you know, I mean, I want to see you do an LP. I want to see a long play from you.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, we're absolutely going to do that. I mean, you know, it's given that it looks like I'll have more downtime again from at least the recording side of the house and on other bands. That'll give me time to get more stuff down and hopefully get back in the studio with Skid, who's just an absolute genius. He's an awesome producer.
How do you find time just to do everything?
Don't sleep.
You don't sleep. Okay, good.
Yeah, no, I don't. I honestly, it's like a jigsaw puzzle. I mean, I fill in the gaps with different responsibilities from the different areas of my life. You know, I'm fortunate to be able to do that. With Venue, I'm really lucky that I can do that job from anywhere. Doesn't matter where I'm at, because it's really mostly, you know, computer and phone and, you know, whatever else. And then, you know, with Rock House, I do try to get down to Florida, you know, once or twice a month and just, you know, keep my finger on the pulse. But it's just time management and very little sleep.
Well, Zach, we do appreciate you coming back on the show. I know we've enjoyed talking to you again. And so we want to give you the chance here to tell everybody how to keep up with you and where to find Fight and how to give you some money.
Awesome. I'll be more than happy to share that information. So our main website is zachbearmusic.com, and that's ZACHBAIR music.com. Then we are on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube under the handle ZachBearOfficial, ZACHBAIR official. And, of course, you can get the music on Spotify, but you can also get it on iTunes Music and Amazon, which pays the artist a lot more than Spotify. So if you like the music, I will go down that road to get it. Awesome. And you can keep up with everything with the band on those websites.
Awesome. Well, Zach, like I say, we totally appreciate it. And for those people who listened to the first one and didn't listen to your music, well, they should definitely get out there and listen to your music this time. There's no excuse. And listen on Amazon. So,
man, thank you so much, guys. And I appreciate your support and appreciate the opportunity to once again be on your show.
Thank you very much, sir. It's been a pleasure.
Absolutely. And awesome, we'll, guys. We'll talk to you later. All right.
Cheers.
All right. All
right. Cheers. Thank you.
Bye now.
Find your way, and then a piece inside you makes it okay. Sometimes they're hard, but you follow through. Your friends seem plenty, but you find there are few. You gotta go, you've gotta move. When things are certain, when there's nothing. Took up some change and I'll be just fine. Yeah, 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 yeah. Some other day, some other way. The better days will be here to stay. Silent eyes, FD.